The GPS Dairycast features the high-value insights of the GPS Dairy Consulting Team's trusted advisors and the owners and managers from the elite dairy farms they serve. These conversations deliver on the GPS Dairy Consulting promise to inspire change and grow leaders.
Hello and welcome to the GPS Dairycast. I'm Peggy Coffin from the Up Level Dairy Podcast, serving as your host. And on this GPS Dairycast, you'll be hearing about one of the top concerns for dairy producers right now, the bovine influenza A virus. Perhaps you are asking, what are the signs and symptoms? Are there ways to prevent it? What actions can you take right now to prepare yourself, your team, and your supplies inventory? We are answering these questions and more today with GPS Dairy Consultant King Hickman, who has been helping his clients manage the disease and mitigate their risk. And King is going to broaden the lens to view the virus as just one type of risk that can threaten your dairy. And he will walk you through a tool he uses to help his clients plan, prioritize, and take action in their businesses. And you can use it today, too. Hear all this and more on the GPS Dairycast with King Hickman. King, you have been keeping a tight pulse on this situation. Give us an update. What do you see and hear going on with this virus?
Well, as you can imagine, it has become quite a topic of discussion in the dairy industry, and I think everybody's worried about it in one way or the other. And it started, as most people know, in Texas in a herd and spread to Kansas. And since then, it's spread to New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, South Dakota, one case in Michigan, I believe, and who knows how many others. Those are the ones that have been reported. I think the thing to keep in mind is most all of those were spread by the movement of cattle from an infected site to a new site. So I don't know how much they've actually seen spread from the migratory birds that would be the housing of the virus. What I want to tell most people is it's something to worry about, but it's not a situation where we're going to have to depopulate herds or anything like that. So we're trying to keep it more low-key than that. But it is serious, so we need to treat it like it is.
So the level of severity when it comes to the concern and being heightened in the minds of producers and those of us working in the industry is real. However, what you're sharing with us is that when we look at comparatively to the avian influenza, which is something that we've all seen and watched over the years in the poultry industry, you don't see this as that same level of severity when it comes to depopulation and eradication of infected animals?
Right. That is a very highly pathogenic virus that kills a lot of the birds. And a lot of times the only way they can get on top of it is to depopulate. Where this is not that highly pathogenic virus that is. It's the morbidity rates or the percent of the herd that's affected is lower. What we're seeing is somewhere around 10% or under. The mortality rates are not that high. Not even 10% was what most herds are seeing. So it's lower morbidity, lower mortality. But it does create some economic loss to the dairy and a lot of headache and hard work for it for a couple weeks while they're going through it. So it's not to be taken lightly, and I think we need to try to do what we can to prevent it on the herds and make sure that we are treating it appropriately. We do know that it's harbored in migratory birds and that would be the major source of spread. As those birds move and come into your dairy and contaminate things, that's going to be your main way of spread.
What do we know about how we can prevent it? Is it possible to prevent something spread specifically by an animal that migrates and moves across the country that we already have a hard time controlling on our dairies?
Right. It's very possible for herds to become infected. I don't think there's a guarantee that I don't think that every herd is going to become infected. It's luck of the draw in a lot of situations, I think. So there's no way that I can say, if you do these things, I can guarantee you won't contract the virus in your herd. But I think there are some things you can do that can lessen the likelihood that you will get it. And of course, we can't prevent every bird from coming in the barn or everything else. But I think there's some things that you can do. And the one is just if there's ways to minimize access of the birds to your barns and to your facilities. And that's hard to do, but you know, we've seen people put netting up across openings and just whatever they can do to try to limit the access of the birds into the barn. I think we need to manage managed cow movement within the dairy, and especially from other sites, and make sure that we're cleaning trailers and things like that. Some people are segregating new animals coming onto the farm. So a lot of these, like I say, a lot of these cases came when a dairy moved heifers from a heifer growing facility in Kansas or Texas back to their home farm. And that's going to continue to happen. You can't not keep bringing those animals back. But what some have done is set up separate sites off-site from the dairy that they can move those heifers back up early, say 30 days or 60 days. 20 to 30, I think, is probably most common. And they'll put them on that separate facility and observe them for that 21 to 30 days, make sure that they don't have any health issues before they bring them back to their general population. So that's another thing they can do. And I think the other thing is really train your employees and the caretakers of those animals. It's good if you have a one crew that's dedicated to your hospital pen, and they're not, if possible, not circulating back among the other animals in the barn. And just try to keep things segregated. Keep your hospital pen in a quiet place. In case you do start pulling animals, you can limit the exposure. So those are some things that you can do. The AABP has come out with a document on biosecurity recommendations for the virus and even more. So your veterinarian would have access to that. If he's a member of the AABP, can download that from their website, or the National Milk Producers Federation, I think, also has it on their website, which I think anybody could access. So it's a nice 6-page document that gives a lot of tips on just basic biosecurity things that you can do. Another one is, limit people coming onto the dairy. I don't think you have to completely shut your dairy down, but make sure they're only accessing the areas that they need to. Your milk truck drivers, keep them in the milk house. You don't let them wander through the animals, or so. And same with other deliveries. Just keep them going where they need to go and leave.
We may not be able to prevent the exposure, but there are things that a producer can do to be prepared. And so, as you're having conversations with some of your top clients across the country that have concerns about this virus getting nearer to their dairies, to where their animals are located, to their businesses, how are you leading those conversations with what they can do to be prepared and how they may be able to handle infected or sick animals that end up showing up on their sites?
How to recognize it if it does show up on your herd, and then to be vigilant and looking for those things. A lot of times what these herds are seeing is a sudden drop in dry matter intake. If they have rumination meters, even a day or two before they see the dry matter intake start to drop, they will see ruminations start to tail off in some animals. Keep monitoring your dry matter intake. Monitor it by pen, because most of the cases are occurring in later days in milk. Animals that are, say, 150 or 190 days in the milk out, we don't know why that's impacting them first, but we have seen it impact lower days in the milk animals as well. But those would be the ones that you would see it in most likely first. So monitor your dry matter intakes, make sure you've got a good handle on that, and if you see them start to drop, then that's a pretty good indication. You'll start to see deviates in your milk production list if you're managing a deviate list or something like that. Animals will start to drop in milk, and we're seeing dramatic drops in milk and dry matter intake. And that'll occur. It seems like it occurs 6 to 7 or 5 to 6 days even before they start to pull sick animals. So if you start to see that, then you need to be vigilant and really start looking for sick animals, and they'll start to appear. Things that they'll show is just a general malaise, sunken eyes if they're dehydrated, and you'll pull them there. They have no rumen motility at all. For some reason, this really shuts their rumens down. And so you'll see off feed, sick cows, no rumen motility. And some of them will start to exhibit kind of a thick yellowish milk that some people say looks like colostrum. So you'll start to see those things. And so I think first is be educated on what to look for and be vigilant in looking for it so you can detect it early.
So looking for those symptoms, as you mentioned, and those patterns that could be occurring. As far as preparation, part of preparation too is being prepared that if you do have those cows that are exhibiting those symptoms, What have you been hearing and seeing as treatments that have been able to get these cows back on track?
I think that the thing that we saw early on was a tendency to treat every sick animal. And it put a lot of pressure on the hospital pen. They got overcrowded, put a lot of pressure on the sick cow crews that were having to treat these animals day after day. And I think that what we did was probably over-treat animals. If you look at this, it's influenza A, just like you and I have the opportunity sometimes, different strain, but to get influenza A. And we go to the doctor, and what do they say? Oh, it's just a virus. Go home, take care of yourself, rest, and let us run its course. So I think a lot of these cows, that's what they need to do. You'll notice them sick, but they may not be running high fevers, and they just don't look good. So what has progressed here is that people have started to look at having two hospital pens. So they'll have one hospital pen for the severely sick animals that they can actually provide care and treatments to. They'll have a second sick pen that will be just for generally sick animals that, like I say, don't have a fever, don't exhibit, you know, systemic signs. And it's really important, I think, to just let those animals rest. You want to be in there once in a while. You want to observe to make sure none of them get sicker. But it's like, let's take the stress off them, put them in a quiet place in the back of the barns that don't have a lot of traffic, that aren't exposed to a lot of other cows moving past, and just let them eat their way through it, I guess is what I would say, and just get through it. Then you have the really sick cows that in the other sick pen, and those, maybe that's 10% of the ones you pull or 20%, but they'll be, a lot of times will have a higher fever, they'll be more severely dehydrated, they may have a secondary respiratory disease or a mastitis that needs to be treated. And those I think you need to pay more attention to. And mostly what we've seen is supportive treatment. So if they're dehydrated, we've seen that they pump 10 to 15 gallons of an electrolyte solution into the cow. Or if they're severely dehydrated, hypertonic saline IV to help that. And then just treating them supportively for whatever. So yeah, I think it's being conservative in your treatment, letting animals take the stress off, let them work through it, and just let it run its course and try to minimize the really sick ones. Give them as much support as you can. And then what we see is 2 weeks to 3 weeks, the intakes will start coming back. It's really interesting when you look at records from a dairy where they'll start to pull, maybe they'll have 6 pulls, and the next day they'll have 10 pulls, and the next day it's 20 pulls. And then you start to see that as you progress through, there's fewer and fewer until you're not pulling sick animals anymore. Then you're pretty much through it, and then you deal with aftermath, I guess, which is another thing we should talk about.
So aftermath, what does that look like?
Well, as I said, this is impacting mainly longer days in milk animals. They're late in their lactation. They have fewer alveolar cells. Those alveolar cells are starting to regress and shut down as their milk production starts to wane in the end of lactation. So when you take a cow like that and you totally take her, knock her off feed, and her milk drops maybe from 60 pounds to 10 pounds or 90 pounds to 10 pounds, a lot of those animals just don't come back in milk production. So it's people keeping an eye on that. Some of those animals will be culled, and some of them may be dried early to be left in the herd. That's pretty much what we'll see. You don't see a lot of mortality after the initial insult.
So, King, you've been in this business for a long time as a nutritionist and consulting and just really working side by side with dairy producers. You've lived with those producers you serve through different disease challenges and things in the past. How does this stack up with other things that you've experienced? Is there anything comparable that you've been through in your time in this business?
This is actually, it'll be 35 years this spring that I started working in the dairy industry. I've seen disease outbreaks, nothing as dramatic as this. It's been quite eye-opening to see how this came out of nowhere. They hit herds so hard that you just don't see something that you don't see intake drops like that often. So it's really been enlightening. Like I say, I've seen other individual herd outbreaks, things like that, but nothing like this.
So it's pretty unique, even for someone that has a lot of experience. So at this point, is your view of the virus that it is a stumbling block that our industry will continue to get past? Or is this a roadblock?
It's a bump in the road. Yeah, I think if we continue to manage it like we have, herds have been very good about taking care of the cows and making sure they get through it. A dairy that gets it, it's a big economic impact when you see milk loss of milk and cows and things like that. So, but it's a bump in the road. I don't think it's going to get to a point where it's a roadblock at all. I think we'll get worked through it here, and this too shall pass, I always say. Well, I think the big thing is, you know, how can they be prepared for it? Besides just knowing how to recognize it, I hope that I've encouraged my producers to have a plan. You don't know if you're going to get it, but we're pretty sure what happens now when you do get it and what the progression is and what you need to do. So it's having those protocols in place, know what your treatment protocols are going to be, have your people trained so that they can implement them quickly, have those biosecurity measures on hand, and take it as far as get some extra supplies on hand. We know we're going to have to pump these cows with electrolytes. Maybe up to 10% of your herd is going to need to be pumped 2 or 3 days. So have those things on hand, have the anti-inflammatories, have the hypertonic saline, get it ordered, get it on hand. You'll use it eventually if you don't get it, but what you don't want to do is all of a sudden have all these animals to pump and you've got no products to do it with. So, and then the other thing is keep good records, I think, of the progression of the disease, which animals get it, which animals, you know, so that you can keep continuing to track them through. So.
And King, what you've laid out, it sounds like there will at some point probably be a binder on every dairy producer's shelf that goes right next to every other biosecurity binder and crisis management binder that will be the bovine influenza A virus binder that outlines all of these steps and protocols and best practices that we've been talking about today. And that's all part of something that you talk with dairy producers about. And let's look at this from a wider lens, and that's really risk management.
It is, and I try to have those conversations with my clients not on a regular basis, but occasionally it's like, have you taken the time, and it's amazing how many have, but have you taken the time to look at all the things that could go wrong on the dairy? What are some of the risks that you have for every day of things that might happen that you can't predict or have little ability to predict? And are you ready to address them when they do come? And so then it's how do you identify those things and which ones do you really need to focus on and which you don't? So I've used a tool to be able to do that, and it seems to work pretty well.
So these are conversations that you're having on a regular basis, really, to help your producers continue to push towards that elite level, not just by focusing on the things that they can do every day to gain that extra pounds of milk or to build up their components, but really to manage the threats to their business.
Make your feed center a profit center. FeedFit is an innovative, module-based, and collaborative initiative from GPS Dairy Consulting, which provides the framework and resources to understand the financials, trace the inventories, and track the KPIs of your feed center. By implementing the expertise of your GPS consultant, modules are strategically executed with the goal of continual improvement in the efficiency of your feed center. Take the science of nutrition to the reality of milk in the tank with FeedFit. To learn more, ask your GPS Dairy consultant or look under the Education tab at gpsdairy.com.
So as you mentioned, you have a tool that you are able to present to dairy producers and clients that you sit down with to start walking through that. And so you're going to share that with us today.
I can do that. I have to say it's not my tool, but it's a tool that I've used. It actually comes from a coaching organization called Mind Shop. I use a coach. If you've been to our Leaders Forum, Matt Heemster has spoken at our Leaders Forum before, and he's kind of coached me to use this tool. So I have to give Mind Shop credit. I didn't invent this on my own, but I think I've learned to use it kind of successfully. So I'd like to bring it up on screen, and we can walk through it.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there that are listening to the podcast, what you'll want to know is that this is also available on YouTube. So if you're on Spotify, you're able to watch the video. If you listen on one of the non-video platforms, you can head over to YouTube and you'll be able to see this risk management tool that Kane is going to walk us through. So make sure that if this is something that piques your interest, that you know it's also something that you can go back and you can re-watch later with your teams, with yourself, with the other managers that are part of your core group, with your trusted advisors, so that you can really take this and implement it. King, walk us through what we are looking at, this risk management tool that you use.
Yeah, so this is a tool that I use, and this is the expanded version of it that I have up on the screen. A lot of times I just walk through this on the dairy in a smaller version on a flip chart or on a whiteboard. You don't need anything fancy. But we're going to call this one, we're just going to call it Peggy's Dairy. So what we do, I'm going to cross out some boxes here that we're not going to use that we may on the farm use. So what this is, if you can't see it, is there's a grid that talks about the potential. It calls it mode of failure. I just call that the risks. And then what you should do is list all those out and then talk about things about what are the effects of that failure, what are the potential causes, and how can you know if it's going to happen? So we would talk through those things. But for purposes of this exercise, a lot of the times I do this on the dairy is abbreviate it. We'll leave out those three blocks. So what we'll talk about is I'll call this a risk or of something happening on the dairy. So what we're going to list those out, and then over to the right here, talk about, so what's the severity of that risk? If it happens, is it a huge impact on the dairy? Is it relatively mild, or is it like a game changer? So, and we would rank that 1 to 10, where 1 would be not very severe at all. A 10 would be it's that game changer that could end your dairy almost. We'll talk about the severity, and then we'll talk also about the occurrence. So what's the likelihood of this actually happening? With a 1 would be very, very rare. It's almost never going to happen. And a 10 would be, it'll happen sooner or later. It happens on every dairy. It's going to happen on ours. That would be a 10. And then the last one would be the detection. So the acronym is SOD. That's how I remember which ones to write. But, and that's, so if it's going to happen, how likely are we to be able to detect when it's going to happen or that it's happening? So a number 1 would be, we know it's going to happen. We see it coming. We can get prepared for it. Or a 10 would be like an earthquake. You don't know when an earthquake, you have no way, you know, maybe the experts somewhere know what's happening. But for the most of us, it's like, holy crap, the earth is shaking. And we didn't have any, that would be a 10. So what we would do is we'd write the risk down and we'd rank those things on a scale of 1 to 10. So we might start off with, a blizzard. I live in northwest Iowa where blizzards happen quite often. Not this winter, but usually. So we'd write down blizzard on the whiteboard. Then we'd say, okay, what's the severity? If we have a blizzard, what's it going to be? And actually out here, it's probably pretty slight because we know how to deal with them. And it's just an occurrence. So I'll put that a 3 there. And then I would put the occurrence. Yep, it's going to happen. Maybe not every year, but it's almost certain it's going to happen. So I'm going to rank that a 9. And then the detection limit, it's like, well, we have weather forecasts. They're telling us anymore, sometimes a week in advance, and sometimes they're even right, that a blizzard's coming. So I'm going to put, it's pretty certain, a high level of certainty, I'll call that a 3, that we can detect it. So if we add those up or multiply them, 3 times 9 times 3, we have a priority number of 81. Oops, wrong square for that one. So then let's take something like the bovine influenza A virus, and we'll rank that. So what's the severity if that hits our herd? 1 through 10. I'm going to call it a 9. It's pretty serious. It's a whole herd health event, creates a lot of stress, a lot of things going on. And then the occurrence, how likely is it to happen? Well, right now, we know it's probably moderately high. that we could get infected with it in some shape or form. And then the detection limit, how are we able to detect? Well, we're not really going to know until it hits our herd, right? We can try to anticipate it, but in all likelihood, until we're actually infected with it, we're not going to be able to predict whether we will or not. So I would call that a 10. Mm. So you multiply those together, 9 times 7 times 10, that's a 630. And as I walk through, usually what we'll do, we won't rank them one at a time like that. We'll just get the whole list up there, and then we'll rank each one. And what I try to encourage my clients is for those risks that we identify that have over a 100 risk priority number, they should have a plan in place for it, because it is going to impact the herd. So what I'm saying here is bovine influenza A virus at a 630 risk priority, people need to have a plan in place before it hits. And that we talked through that earlier in the podcast, what things they need to have together. So we could keep going here, but I think they get the point. So then, yeah, you would come down to the bottom and we would put bovine influenza A virus, strategies to reduce or eliminate the risk. You start listing out what those strategies are. And then you go one point further and say, all right, who's doing that and by when? Who's doing that and by when? So that you can pretty quickly put a plan together, but you hold people accountable to do their part.
So this is a huge tool in, for one, priority setting of what needs to be taken care of from a risk standpoint, but then also being able to break it down into the actionable items and the deadlines and timelines for execution. You've laid out two things that people are common with, at least in the Midwest, blizzards, and then across the country right now, this virus. What other scenarios do you end up at other times putting under this risk category?
A lot of times manure spills come up quite often. If you have a lagoon that spills, or you have a hose that breaks and you have a spill of some kind, that'll come up. Sometimes a parlor breakdown, something happens there. Another one, something that actually comes up quite often, is the computers blow. You know, you lose computers or you lose electricity. And more specifically, they're like, okay, the Dairycom computer blows. And we'll rank that. Those are some other examples.
Great examples to share. And again, it really puts into perspective. We all have those things in the back of our minds that we know we need to take care of. But then sometimes we just need to be able to see it written out and spelled out to actually prioritize taking action. Is that what you see happening when you sit down with people and walk through this?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the things that we come up with, they're not eye-openers as far as, well, yeah, we knew that could happen. The eye-opener is, yeah, we don't really have a plan in place for if it does. We're going to be running by the seat of our pants. So that's, I think that's probably the more eye-opening thing. Not so much the situations, but it's like, yeah, maybe we should have a plan for that. And I have seen a lot of them take action and do it.
And I'm sure there are many clients that you have that are doing exactly this right now, and that's taking action on this specific topic, the bovine influenza A virus.
This is one I've probably had more questions on as far as this type scenario of how can we prepare, what do we need to have on hand, how should we treat it if it hits, and they're all trying to be prepared to know what to recognize and how to deal with it.
King, what you've laid out here for our viewers and listeners that can see this rubrics for evaluating risk and then being able to take action on it, you've been able to maybe see us walk through this. If you've been listening, what you might be thinking is, where can I actually find this risk assessment tool? And King, that's something that we can include in our show notes, right? A link for any of our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, we can include the Mind Shop link. And I know there's YouTube videos that walk through how to do the exercise. And they can always email me and I can send it to them.
All right. And we'll make sure we include that email address for you in our show notes as well. King, we have covered a gamut today between the virus that is on everybody's mind. And then also for those that aren't dealing with it face-to-face right now, but want to make sure they have a plan to take action, be prepared, and also be able to prevent this in whatever ways they can from infecting their herd. You've been able to deliver that as well with sharing this risk management tool. And once again, this is something that you've used to lay out as an example in the current state that many of our dairy producers are facing right now, but it's a tool that can be used for so, so much more beyond just how we can mitigate the risk around the virus. And so, King, final thoughts as we wrap up this conversation on the GPS Dairycast.
I think the big thing is practice risk management on a regular basis. And then as far as the bovine influenza A virus, just be prepared for it. I don't think it's going to be as big a blow up as it could be. I think it's going to be relatively manageable, and just be prepared. And if it hits, contact your veterinarian and get the plan rolling.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that sound advising around the virus that's on everyone's mind here in the dairy industry. And King, thanks for joining us on the GPS Dairycast.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this GPS Dairycast featuring GPS Dairy Consultant King Hickman. And for more information, make sure you check those show notes. Thank you for jumping on with us. I'm your host, Peggy Coffin from the Uplevel Dairy Podcast, and we'd like to thank you for listening to the GPS Dairycast.
The GPS Dairycast features conversations that deliver on the GPS Dairy Consulting promise to inspire change and grow leaders. If this GPS Dairycast has you looking for more ways to become an elite dairy producer, find more information in our show notes on how you can add a GPS advisor to your team.